Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever and always acceptable unto you. For you are our rock and our redeemer, our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end, the source of our love and a wellspring of our joys. Amen. There is a deep fear that I believe we all share, a fear that maybe we are born with, that children have, that for us as adults lies deep in our bones and is played out in the darkness of our psyches. It's a fear even written about throughout literature. Goldilocks and the Three Bears, for example, a well-known story that we remember reading to our children and perhaps our grandchildren. Do you remember that feeling in the pit of your stomach when you realized you had become lost? That kind of feeling is captured for Goldilocks when she realized that she was lost. Goldilocks had ventured into the forest on her journey and had become completely lost. She was turned around. All the trees looked the same. And there was that little girl, lost without anywhere to go. I remember the first time I read that story to my children, wondering, why do we subject our children to such torture? You can see on your child's face the sense of fear and confusion, compassion for Goldilocks, and a relentless conviction to never be a Goldilocks in our own life. It's not just children who are afraid of being lost. This fear is one which comes to rest deep in our psyche. When we are in a strange land, traveling perhaps, eventually we yearn to return home. We yearn to return home to where things are familiar, home to where we know the landmarks, home to where we can drive seamlessly in our neighborhood without effort. There is nothing they say like being home. There's a spiritual parallel to being lost. In the church, we call this sin. Sin, in its purest, simplest of terms, sin is a separation from God. It's when the individual becomes spiritually lost, when they have ventured away from all that is familiar, lost from the loving heart of God, lost from the womb of creation, lost from the grace and peace that God offers. Sin is a time when we have become lost. Lost from the God who created us and who loves us and who offers us life in all of its abundance. When we become lost, things happen which we never imagine. Think about Goldilocks, that precious little girl. Black patent sandals on her feet, a colorful dress and a woven hat, apple pie cheeks and a smile that would brighten up even the rainiest January day in Surrey. Yet Goldilocks broke the law. She was a common criminal. We ever imagine her to be capable of such things? Of course not, but she did. She broke into a house that was breaking and entering. Then she proceeded to damage the chair that was too small when she sat on it. That was vandalism. Then she proceeded to steal the porridge. That's theft. So how much time should this dear Goldilocks serve for her horrible crimes? But seriously, who would have thought that Goldilocks was capable of breaking and entering, of theft and of vandalism? It's amazing what people are capable of when they're lost. David, too, was lost. We spent some time with his story last week. We found that David was overcome by lust, then proceeded to commit adultery, and then committed murder. The king of the land, a common criminal. David, too, was lost. He spied the beautiful Bathsheba from afar, and came to believe that he was above any law or moral code that even God could place upon him. With his power as king, he essentially rapes Bathsheba. You don't turn down a king, of course. He impregnates her, then covers up the act by having Bathsheba's husband killed and taking her into his harem as yet another wife. David was lost, and the great king of Israel was reduced to a common criminal. Goldilocks craved the comforts of her home. She saw a warm, inviting home that reminded her of when she was not lost. She craved her home, so she went into this home. She craved her mom's home cooking, so she ate the porridge. She craved her favorite teddy bear, so she slept in the bear's bed. I believe that when we are lost, our deepest desire is to return home. We become literally homesick, ill from being lost, and our very being can only be cured by returning home. Goldilocks' return home was quite climactic, of course. She was awakened by three bears standing over her, wondering who this little girl was. She jumped up out of the bed and simply turned about and ran home. She ran back the way she had come and returned. Now, David was not confronted by three bears, but was confronted by God. Nathan was God's prophet and spoke God's words to the king. Nathan tells King David the parable of the rich man. The rich man who takes the poor man's only lamb and prepares it for his dinner. Nathan confronts him saying, "You are that man. You are the rich man who had many wives. You are the rich man who has the power. You have taken this poor man's only wife, the woman upon whom the sun rises and sets." Perhaps David wished that he was confronted by an angry bear, and then maybe things could have ended right then and at that moment. Goldilocks returned home. She returned simply by turning about and going home. She changed direction and returned. When we distill it down to its purest form, that is the very essence of forgiveness from sin that we understand in the church. Spiritually going home requires the person to change direction. That is the root meaning of confession. David confessed how very lost he was. He turned around, he looked at himself, and he did the most difficult thing possible. He said to Nathan, "God, I have sinned against you. I have sinned against the Lord." For David, there were no excuses. There were no requests for a quick pardon due to his kingly status. There was no bargaining. David simply said, "God, I screwed up. God, I'm lost. God, help me." And in that moment, he simply returns to who he once was, to who he always was. He returns home. For Goldilocks, she returns home because she knew the essence that home was love. I would suggest that David's confession to God is that same acknowledgement. He knew that unconditional love and acceptance, what home should be, is the very nature of God. When we return home to God, we are returning home to our womb of creation. We are returning to a God who created us in love, who will unconditionally accept us back. But in order to return home, we need to turn to God. We need to change our direction. We need to change our ways. We need to come back home to God. Now, the other aspect of returning home to God after sin is the restoration of wrongs that have been caused. There's a command to restore things that have been broken as a result of the sin. In the parable, it commands the rich man to restore things fourfold. And the Greek version of this text, the Septuagint version, calls for a sevenfold restoration. In the text, the pronouncement, it says, the man deserves to die. Now, he doesn't physically die. Yet, in this change, parts of him do die in order for a new way to begin. He does die. He dies to his ways of thievery. He dies to his ways of sin. A new man will be born who will restore things and who will work to build a place of justice, a place of community, a place of peace. I was invited a month or so back to attend a 12-step group with a member of our congregation. And some of you will know that this restoration act, this is one of the essential parts of the 12-step recovery journey. The necessity for the individual to restore the brokenness that they have caused when they were once lost. Coming home requires action as well as word. When you think about the regrets in your life, I wonder, what would it take for you to return home to God in your areas of brokenness, knowing that a God of love and forgiveness awaits? Could you begin to restore the brokenness, knowing that God is an active agent, helping in this healing and this restoration? Could you begin to imagine the profound sense of peace that you might know if you returned home to the heart of God? As we come to an end of our reflection time, there's a story about a wealthy man who was reading his own obituary one morning. The headline read, "Dynamite King Dies." As the story goes, the man had been the inventor of dynamite and was described in his life summary as being the merchant of death. The hoax was not factual, however, as he was very much alive. Albert had amassed a great fortune through the manufacture of dynamite and other weapons. But that morning, while reading the obituary, he realized that he had never fully come to grips with the way in which his memory touched the world. While the truth in the obituary was not factual, it turned out, however, to be prophetic. Reading that obituary was a turning point for the man. It was a moment of conversion for Albert Nobel, because from that point on, he devoted his efforts towards peace. If we were to write his obituary today, we would likely focus more on peace and less on dynamite, because Albert Nobel came to found a prize awarded for humanitarian work in the area of peace that we all quite know as the Nobel Peace Prize. We've probably never sold dynamite in our life, but we do have our life's regrets that have caused destruction, that have caused sadness, that have caused brokenness in our wakes. We take heart knowing that we have a loving God who invites us home, who invites us to use our days to work for restoration and further build a kingdom of peace and shalom. Thanks be to God for this good news. Amen.